Yeah.
And it's really not treated this way. I mean, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to give it, follow up with this comment with enough justice that it deserves. But, you know, it's not treated this way. But housing really is closing in and ought to be a human right.
Yes.
The same way we talk about healthcare and some of these other things.
Absolutely.
And it's just absolutely not treated that way. And obviously, we don't have time to dive into that philosophical question deeper. But, you know, ultimately, I think Americans need to be aware of what's going on. And
yeah.
they need to, you know, address the housing crisis with the kind of gravity that it deserves.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, we can't experience our full humanity and dignity without having a home. And so it really is kind of the fundamental bedrock for building a society. And so you should really reach out to your congresspeople and encourage them to support and to push for the votes on these bills, because that is what we need to do moving forward to save this country, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so that is all the time we have. Thank you so much for tuning into Labor Radio. Again, I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
And we will be back with you next month. Have a great evening.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You are listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Today we are very honored to have with us three individuals who helped to organize the International Prisoners Family Conference, which is happening virtually this year, again due to COVID restrictions. So I'd like to introduce them, starting with Kayla Victor. Kayla, hi. Could you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Kayla Victor, and I work in the background, so most people don't see me. Otherwise, last year I actually got seen a little bit because I did all the technical support for the conference and kind of ran it on Zoom just like everybody else was doing.
Thank you. And then Barbara Allen.
Hi, Ben. I'm Barbara Allen. I hail from New York, and I am the founder of an organization called Prison Families Anonymous. And I guess about 11 years ago, I heard about an International Prison Family Conference, and I contacted the folks, and I have been to every conference since, and I met some of the most wonderful people. So I'm proud to be here talking about the conference.
Wonderful. And Julia?
Hi, everybody. Julia Lazarek, and I attended the International Prisoners Family Conference in 2017 and have been going ever since. I've had the opportunity to speak at the conference, and like Barbara said, I've met wonderful people there. I'm currently on the board, and this year's conference is going to be really exciting. I have a nonprofit where Barbara and I have merged our groups, and we are Prison Families Alliance, and we're national and provide peer support for anybody who's affected by incarceration, and work with the families and support them through the peer groups, through information and compassion, and just giving them a place to come. And I also have a podcast called Prison, the Hidden Sentence, and a book with the same name to support the families.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Julia, how's your podcast going?
Oh, it's great. We're in our second season. And we are just reaching out, telling people stories and raising awareness and helping people so nobody feels alone. Nobody has to go through it alone.
Great. Thank you. So let's start by talking just about kind of the conference generally, about the history. Maybe we could start by talking a little bit about the history of the conference. Kayla, you might be the person that I might start with to ask about the history of the conference, because your mom started it, right?
Correct. My mom, Carolina Barz, has started it. She was working in El Paso, Texas with a group of children and realized that when people were working together, they were actually forgetting the families. You know, they're working on prison problems. And so she wanted to see if there was an opportunity to make a difference. So she started a conference. It started in El Paso, Texas, under Community Solutions of El Paso, and was able to grow the conference. Now I believe we're on our 14th year of the conference. Wow. Yeah, so she started it and really wanted to make a difference for families of prisoners, because they kind of are the forgotten people in the community, and everybody is affected by incarceration. So she wanted to bring a light to that. And so she did that. And that's actually where she met Barbara, I believe, in Florida. So it was did you go to El Paso?
No, we didn't go to El Paso. Okay. I went to Florida. And,
yeah. And so that was the second. Mm-hmm. Yeah, second conference. So,
yeah.
So
Kayla, what was your mom doing at the time that kind of gave her the idea to start this conference? Was she working with prisoners at the time? Did she have loved ones in prison herself?
She was working more in the community. She worked actually for the in Giddings, Texas, at the juvenile facility there. She's a social worker, and she was working with kids that were incarcerated, and really wanted to make a difference, because kids are going to get out. I mean, they're, mm-hmm. So she wanted to make a difference in their life. And so she started there. She also worked in Colorado with juvenile offenders. And then when she moved to El Paso, she started, as I said, Community Solutions of El Paso. And what she did was started working with kids for underprivileged kids. And a lot of their family members were either incarcerated, sometimes mothers and fathers, sometimes the grandparents were taking care of kids. And she really wanted to make a difference for those kids. And so that's kind of how it started, from my knowledge of mm-hmm. listening in on things. So that's really kind of the foundation of how it started. She really has a compassionate heart and wants to make a difference.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, knowing, like, since she's your mom, you probably know her better than a lot of people. I mean, there's lots of folks that work with prisoners and have great hearts. I mean, I know so many people who volunteer, and but not everyone takes the next step, which is like have a conference, organize a conference to like help coordinate people and like build support. And I think a lot of people who have loved ones who are incarcerated, they feel isolated. I mean, they don't really know where to reach out to or who to reach out to. And for a lot of people who have a loved one in prison, it's a completely new experience. All of a sudden their loved one is not with them anymore, whether it's their child or their parent or their brother or sister or a cousin or just someone that they care about. The rules of how they interact with that person drastically change. They can have implications on their finances, on where they choose to live, on their free time, on how it affects their children. All of these issues just kind of come out of, everywhere. And to have the motivation to actually begin to tackle this and have a conference, to have these kinds of conversations, it must have really taken some courage on your mother's part.
Yeah, and one of the things I know that you interviewed last year or maybe the year before, with COVID. Yeah, so a couple years ago, Terrence Sampson, and he was actually a child when he met my mom, and she continued to build a relationship with him throughout the years, throughout his incarceration. And as you know, he's been released and is doing really well. So it's not like she just goes in and it's just a job. She really, really cares about people and wants to make a difference, and really wants to help people collaborate. And like Julia and Barbara had mentioned, they're working together towards bringing families together for their support groups. That came through the conference. So I think the conference has seen a lot of growth. We have an international component for the conference now. And so that all started because my mom decided that she wanted to make a difference. So it's great.
Thank you. So Barbara, let's talk about are you speaking at the conference this year?
Yes, I am. I'm great. Speaking about the importance of support groups.
Oh, great. Let's talk about that. Can you tell us a little bit about it? Can you give us a little preview? What will you be talking, what will you be talking about?
Okay. Well, I'll give you a little background about how I became involved and who I am. In 1966, my husband went to prison for murdering his father. And I was left with two small children and no place to go, no one to speak with, no one who understood what was happening. And so I felt as if I were just floating in an island by myself. So I started a support group. I started it for me because I needed the support. And here we are over 50 years later, and we're still offering love, support, and caring. The folks I met over the years, and I'll certainly include the ones I met at the conference, have become extended family. We use the word prison families for a reason. We're not only families of the person who's incarcerated, but we develop a relationship with one another, because the prison family is the collateral damage of the criminal justice system. And we are often looked upon as part of the problem, where we know that we are and can be part of the solution. And coming together at the conference, we meet like-minded people. And I met Julia, and we started this this national support group. I wrote a book called Doing Our Time on the Outside, because that's who we are.
Wow. So some of the stories that you must have heard over the last 50 years have really helped to inspire you to do the work that you're doing, Barbara. What are some of the challenges that people face who have loved ones who are incarcerated? What did you have to deal with? And what are stories that you've heard from other people? I know there's so many.
Yeah, there certainly are. And if you're as old as I am, remember the radio show, there are 8 million stories in the Naked City. Mm-hmm. Well, I think I've heard at least 7 million of them. Mm-hmm. Because this is an issue that really goes beyond what people are aware of, because as we're the collateral damage, and we affect so many other people in our lives. I was a school teacher. I had two small children and a lot of publicity when this happened. And it was, to go back out into the world, first of all, to show your face when you know it's been in the newspapers, and back then it was more radio than television. But how do you go out and face people? What do you tell your children? How do they react to this? Your big concern is, I have two children now who have to go through this trauma and crisis. And so you have to take one step at a time. Of course, it's kind of learned. We're really in shock when it happens. It's denial, disbelief. And we have a system to navigate that I tell people is like Alice in Wonderland going down that rabbit hole. And you have what you see is not what you expect to see. And if you don't have the support, you think you're the only one. And it's almost unbelievable. So just navigating the system is a problem. Mm-hmm. The language, it's a whole new language, it's legalese. People don't know the difference between a jail and a prison. They don't know what to expect. And I guess I can go on. But
please, yeah. I mean, and I'm happy to intersperse with questions to help prompt the conversation. So just for the curiosity maybe of our listeners, what happened to your husband?
He went to prison, of course. And part of my story is my husband murdered his father in an alcoholic blackout. And there was a history of child abuse. So that was brought out during the trial. Or before the trial, he didn't go to trial. He pled guilty, but there were many, many hearings before that. And he went to prison. I thought he would probably go to a psychiatric hospital. So I was absolutely floored when I heard he was going into a prison setting. And the judge at the time sent word through my attorney, because I asked what's going to happen to him. And the judge said, and I quote, "This is the answer to my prayers, because my husband will get the help that he needs." Well, need I say, there was not one single bit of help. If anything, he got worse. Mm-hmm. He never dealt with the issues that brought him where he was. And he spent a year in county jail and then the time he spent in prison without dealing with what he did and burying it. And he came out because of the fact that he was a battered child, and we were an upper middle class family. I'm a school teacher. We're Caucasian. For all those reasons, he did not do much time. But he came out and violated his parole because he was an alcoholic, never dealt with his issues, and never stopped drinking. So he violated his parole. I say he did his time on the installment plan. And eventually he came out of prison. And I will say there was a happy ending because finally, my husband, I had divorced him. I had to divorce him after he came out of prison because he became abusive towards me. And mm-hmm. I did have two daughters. Mm-hmm. But he got sober through AA, and he helped many, many, as he said, he's deceased now, but he helped many, many struggling alcoholics. He used his story finally to help others. And I continue doing this work. He's deceased now, it's gonna be 23 years, I can't believe it. And I'm an octogenarian. And mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But this is my passion, and I will probably work to help families to my dying breath, because never, ever want anyone to go through this experience by themselves, as I had to do.
Thank you. Julia, will you tell us about your involvement in the conference and about this organization that you started with Barbara?
Right. My story goes back to my brother who was incarcerated, and he spent 15 years in prison for a life sentence. He had Hep C that he got, we don't know if it was before he went in prison or after, but he passed in prison about 8 years ago. And after he passed, I looked back on what I'd been through and realized that I was living a hidden sentence, that I was serving the sentence with him. And I didn't want anybody to ever have to do that alone. And I got involved with a local organization here, and meeting Barbara at the conference, we started collaborating with people at the conference that wanted to have support groups, that had support groups, that wanted to help more people. So we started Prison Families Alliance so that we could reach out to people, especially across the United States during the pandemic, because even groups that were meeting in person weren't able to do that anymore. And there were people that were having loved ones taken into the prison system that didn't have groups in their area. So we grew this group because we met at the conference, and because the people that we met at the conference that needed the support and reached out to others, that we were able to create this organization where we've helped over 250 families over the pandemic. And I just want to go back to the conference. After my brother passed and I found out about the conference, I got more involved with the groups and talking about it, because the whole time that my brother was incarcerated, I didn't speak about it. I didn't tell anybody because of the stigma and the shame associated with it. And after I started speaking about it, going to the conference, meeting people, I found my voice that I could talk about it. I found a safe place at the conference where I met other people who were in the same situation, and I saw that I wasn't alone. So the conference is a great place for people to come together, whether you have somebody that's incarcerated, whether you're deal with people that are part of the criminal justice system. If you want to learn more about it, it's just a great place to come and learn. I think Kayla's going to talk about the speakers in a little bit, so people learn a little bit more about it. However, I just think it's a great opportunity. And for me, like I said, my passion is that nobody has to go through it alone. And Barbara and I both feel strongly that that information is important and that people need a safe place where they can come together and talk about it, where they can support each other and mostly learn from each other, even though people are across the United States, just like with our peer support group and just like the conference, there are certain things that are similar no matter where the person is. Each facility is different. The rules are different, different states. The rules could be different at facilities in the same state, but there's certain things that everybody goes through and that we can share and learn from each other, and nobody has to go through it alone, and people can find safe people to talk to, because there's a lot of stress too, and being able to talk to people relieves the stress and it allows people to live their lives, and that's what's important. Even if you have somebody that's incarcerated, even if you're coming out of prison, that you have the right to live your life, to have a good life, and to move on. And that's what we do. We support people with that, both at the conference and with the support groups and everything that we do.
That's such an important perspective, too. Thank you for reminding us of that, Julia. We're talking today with Kayla Victor, Barbara Allen, and Julia Lazarek about the International Prisoners Family Conference. Kayla, when is the International Prisoners Family Conference happening?
The conference is going to be happening October 20th through the 23rd.
Oh, great. Thank you.
It was going to be virtual this year. I know we mentioned that before, but we want to make sure people know that it's virtual, because we know that things are going to probably shut back down again.
Yeah, right. So, Kayla, who are some of the speakers that are speaking at the conference this year?
So we're really excited this year. Stacy, one of our board members, has been really doing a lot of outreach for us, and she secured Tia Torres, who you may have seen on Pit Bulls and Parolees. She had started a nonprofit organization called Villalobos Rescue Center back in the 90s. So the program pairs dogs, pit bulls, obviously, with parolees in a working environment. We also have a professional comedian, Frank King. He's a TEDx speaker, and he's actually teaching people how to speak and do TEDx talks. He also speaks on mental health and suicide. The third speaker that I can talk to you about is Dr. Corey Novak. She's a TEDx speaker as well, and she is speaking on aging in place in the prison hospice, and really has some really good insight for family members who have loved ones that are in prison and needing hospice care. And also talks, when we had conversations with her, she talks about how we can support from the outside their loved ones. We have some academia. One would be was Danica Hubbard. She's taught for over 25 years as an English professor at College DuPage, and she's taught in Croatia, and she's taught in China, and she's taught in a lot of different places. So those are like four of them. We do have lots more speakers, and people can check out the website at prisonersfamilyconference.org to find out more.
Thanks. So I'm curious about the very first one you mentioned, the pit bulls and parolees. I hadn't heard of that before. Is that, so like when I've done volunteering in prison, I know there's the people who do the service dogs. Like, I don't know if all the prisons do it, but some do. Like where people, it's usually done as a program for, you know, like to motivate people who like have good behavior within the institution. It's kind of like a privilege they get, that they get to help train the service dogs. Is this similar to that, or what is it? What is that about?
To be really honest, I am not 100% sure, but I know it's a television show.
Oh, it's a television show.
Yeah, it's okay. A television show.
Pit bulls and parolees.
Right. And so they're working with people more on the, I believe, on the outside, and obviously parolees would be my indicator. And so they're working with the prison population from the outside. Yes.
Yeah. And the one about the about hospice, that's just such an important issue. I mean, first of all, I just, you know, want to say that no one should die in prison. I mean, I don't care what their sentence is. This is just my own personal opinion as an activist. I mean, if you're at the point where you're hospice care, then like if you can get out into the community, if there's some place you can go, you should at least have some freedom at the end of your life. I mean, there's no reason to make people die in prison. But regardless of that, that's still a reality. A lot of people do die in prison. And a lot of people age out and die in prison too. So this is like a huge issue. Yes, Barbara.
I just wanted to say, with that thought, in New York, we have a program called RAP, Release Aging People from Prison. And that's our goal, that anyone who has been in prison for 15 years has a right to meet with the parole board, not automatically be sent home, but the right to meet the board so that they don't die in prison. Living in prison, you age so much more quickly than you do out here because of obvious reasons, lack of nutrition and proper medical care and so on. So we feel anyone who's 50 years old, has been in prison for 15 years or more, needs to have the opportunity to meet the parole board. And Kayla, didn't we have at more than one of our conferences, and I can't think of his name.
Edgar Barnes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did a documentary on the prison hospice, and he was nominated for an Academy Award for it. So I think we should give him credit. And he's been to a number of our conferences. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of people we have.
That's great. Yeah. Thank you.
I just wanted to add that. Yeah.
Hey, Julia, I was going to say, Julia should talk about the kids component for this year's conference.
Please.
Add on to that. Yeah.
Yeah. We've noticed that, you know, there's a lot of, especially during the pandemic, and always, I mean, there's over 2 million children who have an incarcerated parent, and 1 in 50 children have or had an incarcerated parent. So there's a big need to educate and work with and provide compassion and empower these children, because children who have an incarcerated parent are twice as likely to get into trouble. So these groups bring children together. And at the conference, we spoke to the board and presented it, and they thought it was a good idea. So this year, on Saturday, October 23rd, we're having Kids Day, and it's for kids to come together and learn. We have a speaker, somebody who had an incarcerated parent. It's Zoe Flannery, and she'll be speaking about what it's like to be a child of an incarcerated parent. She's an adult now, but she'll talk about what she went through. And this is just going to help the children so much to hear from another. We're planning a skit for one of the older kids groups, so people can see, or the kids can see, what it's like when in the group and how they support each other. And then we have workshops where the kids are going to have discussions, play games. And also we have a section where it's going to be a workshop for empowerment, for how to handle the stigma, how to handle having a parent or a family member incarcerated, and how to handle bullying, how to talk about it, how to set boundaries. So all of that's going to be in there and really help these children. So we're really excited that we're allowed to do it this year. It's the first year we're doing it. We want to reach out to all the children that have been affected and make sure that they register, because this is going to not only help the children, but it's also going to help the parents too, because the children will be able to go back and to share. And we also are going to have a section, the workshop portion is going to be just for the kids, but then we're going to open it up and invite the guardians and the parents back in so the kids can share what they learned and talk about what they can do to move forward. And each kid will be given a worksheet so that they can continue the work after the workshop. So we're really excited about having that, and thank the board for letting us do it this year. And I just wanted to say the facilitators for this are Zoe Flannery, Marquita Harris, Gail Dennis, and Alexis Schoenfeld, and myself. So we have a great team of professionals that are going to be working with the kids this day.
Great, thank you. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. We're just about out of time for the show. We've been talking today with Kayla Victor, Julia Lazarek, and Barbara Allen about the International Prisoners Family Conference. Kayla, remind us again, when is the date for the International Prisoners Family Conference?
It's going to be October 20th through the 23rd.
And how can people participate in it?
They can register at prisoners.com. familyconference.org and find out more information on the conference.
And Julia, Julia and Barbara, the prisoners.
The website, yeah, the website is prisonfamiliesalliance.org.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Julia, Barbara. Thank you. It's really been an honor to have all of you on Prison Pipeline. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having us.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad,
la ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie. Et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Race, an intergenerational discussion about race with independent journalists from the Pacific Northwest. From Grassroots News Northwest, I'm your host and moderator, Lenita Duke.
Hi, I'm Althea Billings. I'm a journalist and radio producer in Portland, Oregon, and I'm Generation Z.
Greetings. I am Professor Johnson, political analyst and educator, and baby boomer from the Lone Star State, Texas.
I am Cecil Charles Prescott. I host a talk show in Portland, Oregon, and I am a baby boomer.
I'm Nia Gray, the faith reporter from Pennsylvania, and I'm Generation X.
I'm